Hey, everybody. Wendy Sellers here, the HR lady. Thanks for coming. We're missing my co-host today, JC, as he's on a work vacation. Not really. He's traveling for work, not at all vacation. So we're going to miss his great voice. But we have here today with us somebody else who's going to entertain you and educate you. And that is Professor Amy Keeley. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
How you doing? Where are you calling in from?
I am calling in from Detroit Metro. The great
city. How is the weather up there?
Actually 62.
That is amazing.
It is.
That is it, oh my goodness. It's so crazy that, you know, I'm in Florida and it's not much warmer than that today, which is freezing for us. You're probably thinking it's great, but it's just crazy the weather that's been going on all over the place. And the interesting thing that I jump in and talk about the weather, I used to do training on teaching people how to network for jobs. It's a lot different now, but I used to always say things like, where are you from? Because in the United States and around the world, especially now in 2024, you're going to get an answer, right? That's going to be something to talk about. So we're going to be talking about today the topic of confidence. And that could be one thing that can help you gain the confidence to talk to strangers is just talk about things that are not going to be controversial to anyone, which is the weather, you know, sports. Sports are controversial, but they're a little more fun unless you're closer to the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
So with that said, tell our listeners about you and what do you do currently and how did you get here?
I am currently a full-time professor at Lansing Community College. I thought carefully when I decided to get back into teaching. So I was always teaching as an adjunct for probably the last 10 years while working in the HR industry, staffing, workforce management, and just decided that I really belong in the world of higher education where I'm taking all this knowledge that I've collected and really kind of feel like I'm doing something to help other people. So I tend to teach in the business and marketing area since I've throughout my career, I've stayed in business and marketing, but in the last, I'd say probably 20 years in the HR management industry. But I've worked in a lot of different industries. That was always my path. My mother was actually the first female engineer at General Motors.
Wow.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm starting to write a book about her because I get that reaction all the time. And it never really dawned on me. And then I started talking about it and people were like, oh my gosh. So I did a speaking engagement at a women's conference in Illinois about the lessons that I learned from her. And a lot of them were about how to be able to navigate the business world, especially when you're dealing with men and women and how do you do that, especially when you're raising kids. And I just took this different path of working in a lot of different industries, always looking at common denominators, what works in different industries, and then ended up working for Kelly Services, which ironically, when I was in my undergrad at U of M, the University of Michigan, I was working at Kelly Services on assignment at Buick. And so it's kind of full circle that I would end up working for them again. And just really loved the workforce management industry. We were talking about earlier, it's the grayest black and white industry I've ever worked in, where there's all these specific rules, but then you're dealing with people. So it all goes out the window and you're just kind of grappling with things that hit you. And then also the contract side of it, you know, risk management, things like that. You're always considering, you know, service level agreements, things like that. So it was just something that was really fun for me. And then left Kelly and worked for some diversity firms in the same industry, went to India and worked. So I've been around the world and, you know, really kind of appreciate being an American, being home. At least we know the rules that are here. When you go to other countries, you're dealing with other rules that you have to learn. So it just makes it dynamic is probably the best word for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Two things. The fact that you're saying, oh, I love workforce management. It's like, we don't even use that terminology anymore, but I know what you mean because I've been in it for quite some time too. Yep. And it is. I was just on a call wrapping up before getting on this. And, you know, it's a client that I haven't worked with in a while that's had a very, very, very serious issue. And so I have to get all the information and I'm like trying to choose my words wisely. I'm like, how you deliver the message is going to determine if you're getting a lawsuit or just an apology.
Absolutely. And it does change. Like I know Sir Richard Branson is one of the guys that I follow as sort of like this sort of online mentor. He started Virgin Atlantic, Virgin Records, Virgin Pulse that a lot of companies are using now for wellness. And he changed the term to VP of people because he got tired of using the word HR because it was very disconnected from what you're doing as you're working with people. So yeah, it's you know, you use these different terminologies that change so quickly. And like I said, I've been teaching for a couple of years. So yeah, I would expect it to change again.
Yeah. And also great point about working in other countries, because I've done that in the past too, mainly remotely. And holy moly, the laws or the lack of laws, they're either so detailed and just insane compared to what I think. And then I look at some of our laws and I'm like, all right, we need some of those. But it is interesting. I think most people in any kind of, I don't even want to say HR, I do like the term workforce management, because whether you're a business owner, a leader, a director, a manager, you're all wear a little bit of the HR hat. Or if you're an actual HR professional, it's all about, you know, managing our people in the time that we're in.
And it's ongoing with, you know, I mean, I also do generational workforce, or not workforce. I do generational, workforce, the generations in the workforce. Yep. And, you know, I hear people talk about the fact that there are four generations in the workforce now. We've never had that in the most recent years. And how do you navigate that? Because they're so different. And I said, I would argue that there's actually five generations in the workforce. If you look at Warren Buffett, that's still the silent generation, boomer generation, Gen X, millennials, and now Gen Z entering in. And I think that's what's been interesting as a professor, is I'm training Gen Z and I live with them and I hear their concerns and I have that business lens, right? And I'm like, oh, they need to know what's coming their way. But I really do try to take that moment and instill confidence in my students when they're going through my class, knowing what they're going to be heading into in the business world. And I often tell them, like, I think it's the first day, I have them watch the Steve Jobs commencement speech from 2015, where he talks about the connecting the dots. I love that story. And the story is about how he quit school. Didn't really quit school, but quit school and took a calligraphy class. And he goes, I know that there was no practical application for calligraphy. It's just something that had a beauty and an artistry and a history that science couldn't capture. And I loved it. And how he couldn't look, he didn't realize it at the time, but 10 years later, when he was creating the Apple and the Macintosh, what were they known for? Their font system. Because he had learned fonts and sans serif and spacing back 10 years ago. And he talks about how you can't always be able to look forward and connect the dots. You have to trust your instinct, you know, whatever you want to call that, that you trust your gut, that somehow your dots will connect in the future as to where you're meant to go. And I always show them that to kind of inspire them why they're in school and that there are all these choices that they're going to have to make. But I also tell them that the business world is unforgiving and it is unrelentless. And, you know, my job is to teach them the skills that they need to be confident and to know how to navigate that. And then I realized just recently that I say skills, but they don't know what that means. So, I mean, I'll laugh and I'll just show you, but I actually pulled out my Franklin planner from the 1980s. And I said, our brains exploded in the 1980s with technology and with globalization and the pressures that were coming in the workforce, that was the tool that we were taught how to be able to manage our time. So, you know, you look at how does you develop your confidence. And I think I posted on LinkedIn something about from Mel Robbins about confidence. And I was just struck, I think at the time I wrote it, because many people at the University of Michigan are accused of being arrogant. And I've had to have those conversations that we're not arrogant, we're just confident, you know, and there's something that we're taught at the University of Michigan that many of us embrace. And so we see it in each other as confidence, but it also looks like arrogance to the outside world. And you never want to be arrogant. So how do you find that balance between being confident with your skill set that you have and at yourself in general, and how you project it to the world? And I think that's what you go through this learning process of how do I do that, watching people's faces. If you say something wrong and their face goes, you know, quiet, reframing how you think about something, because it's never really intended to be arrogance when you're out in the business world. And I think women struggle with that more than anything, because we have a hard time talking about ourselves. And yet men, it's easier for men to talk about their accomplishments, I think, than women sometimes. And it's been something that's been very interesting to me as we do that. So, like, for example, I talk about the fact that I'm an award-winning marketer. I actually won an American Marketing Association award.
And congratulations.
Thank you. A lot harder than I thought, but I never talked about it at all. It was just something I did. It was something on my resume, got me jobs. But then all of a sudden I started talking about it and saying, I'm an award-winning marketer. And my boyfriend and I actually would have debates that he'd go, oh, you're an award-winning marketer. And I'm like, well, why is it okay for you to say something like that, but I can't say something like that when it's an accomplishment? So I've had to learn to navigate when to say it and when not to say it.
Yeah.
And so it just becomes different because men can promote that all the time where women struggle to promote that. And so I think that's why when I wrote that LinkedIn article or the post about confidence, I was thinking about, you know, how at University of Michigan, there is this perception, but it's just a perception. And how do you manage that in the workforce to make sure that you are coming off as confident and not arrogant? So,
yeah, I know. I found that post. And that's when I emailed you. I was like, hey, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the concept of confidence. And I'm going to read you some stats here. This is from Psychology Today. 85% of the worldwide population is influenced by self-esteem. And it goes on to say, you know, unfortunately, issues of low self-esteem are linked to a number of significant problems with mental health. And then another study says 60% of people said they wish they had more respect for themselves. Mm. It's a lot.
It's a big number. And I think, you know, I always tell my students too, I mean, maybe it's, I don't know if this is just because of how I was raised, or I think much of it has been developed over time, is that you have to, for confidence to happen, you have to look internally. And I think that's what Mel Robbins was talking about, is that we so worry about what other people are thinking about us that we sometimes don't really pay attention to how we think about ourselves. And one of the things that I looked at myself and I said, I've learned to be a really good problem solver. Like, you could throw a garbage can at me and I will figure out how to make it look beautiful and be able to sell it and put lipstick on it and make it look great. And I've just learned over time that there's not anything that anybody can't throw at me, that I'm not good at common sense or problem solving or whatever it is that you think is good about what you do. And then learning to have great pride at that. And now I have this confidence that no matter what comes my way, I will figure it out. And the other thing too I've learned is that it's not just that I have to do it myself. It's your team around you, your friends, your network at work. Even if you can't figure it out yourself, how do you tap into the tools around you, whether it's research online or people around you, to be able to solve problems? And when you have the confidence that you can solve your own problems, I think for me, it makes me calmer. Like, there's nothing that can throw me. And I wish more people could kind of dive in and feel that sort of confidence that they have in themselves, because it is very empowering and it is a stress reliever. You know, I've never been on any kind of depression or anxiety medication. I've always been able to, I think, regulate myself very well. And I think a lot of it comes to just having this confidence in myself that I've had to learn in different ways. So I wish more people would have it, especially at 60%. That's a big number.
Yeah, there's a whole other bunch of stats too. Actually, I'll read you one real quick here. It was, and it kind of went back to about the male versus female thing. 79% of women regularly lack confidence at work and avoid going after promotions, putting them at a disadvantage to men, and less likely to be offered pay raises, whereas 59% of men versus the 79% of women feel that their confidence is, or lack of confidence is, hindering their progress. And 20% of men view themselves as not confident at all. So much, much bigger number in the male-female gap there. Let me ask you this. Do you think that that is changing with the younger generations, or about the same? Are younger generations of women more confident, less confident than, say, you and I? And the same about the younger generations of males. Of course, there's a lot of other genders that we're not talking about right now, but for the sake of the time frame here, we'll just stick with male and female.
That's a really good question. I get concerned with the younger generation because while on some levels they know where their boundaries are at, like, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. You know, when they're out looking for a job, but I look at the trend of parents getting involved with their children's lives. Now their parents are going to their job interviews. I have students that their parents will email me, you know, or, you know, acting as the student with the student's permission.
Wow.
I had one student today who said, well, I can't call McGraw-Hill for troubleshooting. I had to have my mom call. And so what I want to say is I would like to think that the younger generation is different, but I don't see it. Like, I see parents coming in because their kids don't have confidence. So the more time that parents aren't prepping their kids to go and do it themselves and instead do it themselves for them, I see that as somewhat robbing children of this younger generation of their confidence to be able to handle things. And that, I think, to me, that's very troublesome. I see many, on the other hand, that are the opposite, very go-getter, want to be very independent. Yep. But I worry about that growing population of students who really depend on their parents. So when it was like you were 16 or 17, God bless, go to college. You know, it was macaroni and cheese, you know, ramen noodles, bunking with people that you hated so that you didn't want to be there. And that's what I thought that college was this rite of passage where you hated it so much. You thought, I'm never, ever going to live like this again. And now you see these bedrooms that are all decorated real pretty, like my nieces are. And, you know, and it's just like, well, that's for that. That's not like you did that. And I just think it's a different experience, but I hope that they turn that corner because they do have this younger generation has a level of independence that's going to hurt the business world. I think they don't want to work in the business world. And I think that's what you're starting to see. Like I actually read the Department of Justice or the Department of Labor. They had their 2013 report where they were actually projecting the retirement of all of the boomers and Gen Xers. And then I was reading the 2020 when they were starting to talk about the crisis of people like leaving the workplace and not coming back. And they said what they didn't expect is that many of the upper level generation millennials were going to also exit and retire earlier. And that's what they thought was throwing off the workforce. But I also realized that what they weren't factoring in was social media. Is a lot of these young kids are making.
Yep, I was just going to bring that up.
And bought Michaela making millions, and she's 22 years old as an influencer. And we don't factor that in, that this younger generation doesn't want to work. They've listened to their parents complain about, oh, it's 9 to 5. I have to work over. I hate my boss. I hate this. And they're thinking like, why would I want to go work in that environment? And they're not. But yep. I think that the struggle with the social media piece is that, yes, they can monetize it. But there's also, I think it was Mark Zuckerberg that went before Congress talking about the statistic that was used against him, actually, when he said, oh, there's no mental health problems in social media. And one of the senators was like, even your own Instagram survey showed that 60% of all girls on your platform have mental health issues and issues with body, you know, dysmorphia. And I was right. Like, wow. Those are just big numbers. So
yeah, I was reading a stat about that too. I don't have it off the top of my head here, but about Instagram use specifically was a big concern and a cause of low self-esteem. And that most people that completed this survey said we would be up for Instagram giving us a warning that said, hey, you've been on here a little bit too long. You might want to take a break, yeah. You know, and I'm like, wow, I'd be in trouble for that myself.
Well, my niece has got me on TikTok and now I ground myself that only after I do all my work all day, I'll go on TikTok. But until it says you're scrolling too much, and I'm 2 hours of my night are gone. But there is that. And it's interesting how, yeah, I think that confidence plays a part with the social media piece, especially for this younger generation where they're looking at influencers who may not have that life that they're looking for. Like as a marketer, I look at some of these people who are promoting, oh, look at my life. Isn't it great? You know, whatever. And I can see that they're probably in a car dealership standing next to a Maserati going, wouldn't you like to own this car? It's my car. It's just, yeah. It's this big world. And they're trying to compete with people that have this illusion of a life and feeling like I should have that life. And that impacts their confidence level. I can't do it. I don't know where I'm stuck. So it is, you know, social media is still a social media experiment.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a killer of making a lot of money on one side, but on the other side, destroying mental health. Quick mm-hmm. question for you, and I probably have some feedback on this too, is how do we teach confidence specifically in the workplace? So you're a manager, you just hired somebody, regardless of their age, regardless of their gender orientation, gender identity. And you're realizing, you know, they're really smart. They don't seem to have the confidence. So what are some tips that we can give managers to help build confidence? We can't change their lives, you know, their personal lives, but what can we do in the workplace for those 40 hours a week? We wish it was 40, right? To sure. help those employees, you know, feel better about themselves.
Sure. I think that the first one would be better visual listeners. So I've learned that because of my upbringing, I actually spend more time looking at people's nonverbal communication than I do their verbal communication. And when you watch somebody's behaviors or how they're acting, you're going to actually see a lot more. I use it in sales and I love it, but I used it when I was actually managing people, that you can see when somebody shuts down, you know, closing their arms, putting, when you cross your arms, you're actually psychologically and instinctively protecting your core, that, you know, your heart, your lungs. So when people are using these nonverbal behaviors as a manager, you should be looking for them. That's telling you that somebody's feeling insecure about something, if they look down, look away. And I think that once you start to see, if you can be that aware, not everybody can be, and I'm not always saying I'm perfect either, but you start to look at where they're triggering. Like if it's a workload that they have that they're struggling with, if it's, you know, wherever they're struggling, as you as a manager shouldn't be so, because we tend to focus on the negative, right? Well, you didn't get your work done. How come you missed that deadline? Why can't you figure this out? If you instead flip to looking at the positives of what they're doing and highlighting, well, you did a great job there. And sometimes as a manager, you want people to be a generalist and be able to do everything, but realizing that sometimes the people you hire may be better in one area. So focus them on that one area and get really positive results, because as they start to get successes underneath their belt and your compliments and your praise, you will watch people blossom. And then they can maybe come back and take on other things that they weren't good at, because now they have more confidence in themselves. And then that confidence can then just be, okay, well, remember you didn't do a great job when you did, but I now know you can do it. I watch you do it here. So sometimes it's this mentoring that is needed still, especially with millennials and Gen Z. They don't have that life experience that we necessarily have, that you really have to do a lot more mentoring and watching, because they're not going to tell you, because of sometimes pride gets in the way. But I think you see it in nonverbal behaviors more.
Yeah, I completely agree. This has been amazing. I think I could talk to you for hours. So we might have to schedule something else to talk about confidence, which both of us obviously have enough of. But there's some days that I even go, why did I hush that away? I'm like, oh, that's because I didn't want the attention on me. So you've given me a few things to think about. Thank you for that. Hey, how can our listeners find you?
I'm on LinkedIn, and I also have ProfessorKeeley.com is my website, where if you want to contact me there as well. But, you know, definitely on LinkedIn is a great way to be able to get a hold of me.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Professor Amy Keeley, for talking to us about confidence in the workplace. And just as a reminder to our listeners of what she said, is that means you have to pay attention to your workers to help them build confidence. And that's including your remote workers. So in person or not in person, you do have to figure out a way, you know, via Zoom or whatever it might be, to be having live conversations with your employees so you can get better understanding with them. They may not have missed that project. They may just not have the confidence to tell you that they need help.
Right.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for coming, everybody. Take care.
Thanks, Wendy. Have a nice day.